It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show at Locked On Rockets, and of course the blog at ClutchCityCR. And joining me for today's episode, for this Locked On crossover episode between Locked On Rockets and Locked On Thunder, is Locked On Thunder's host, Rylan Styles. Rylan, how's it going, man?
Everything is going pretty good. I'm just waiting out the hours until we get to tip this thing off and watch some playoff basketball between the Thunder and the Rockets.
It's going to be a grueling, exciting, hard-fought, emotional series. My body is ready for it. My heart might not be ready for it. That's just kind of where I'm at this point. Now, basically, what I want to do is, first off, this podcast, just to preface this is going to be very Thunder-centric. And so what you can do is you can check out the Rocket side of things over at Locked On Thunder. But Rylan and I are going to be focusing on the Thunder because we want to get you guys this, the Thunder side of things, the Thunder viewpoint of this series. So first things first, Rylan, just give us a brief overview of the team and just what sweeping changes, if any, have there been since the hiatus? Because, the Rockets obviously underwent a lot of different changes, but what has been going on with the Thunder?
Well, honestly, there hasn't been a lot that's changed since the hiatus besides Andre Robertson coming back. And Andre, of course, returning from almost a three-year hiatus of his own with the knee injury back in the OK 3 days, whenever this was a mellow Russell Westbrook, Paul George show. But nothing else besides that's changed in the hiatus. You lost Dennis Schroeder for all but two games in these eight seeding games. So that changed the way you played a little bit. But he played against the Clippers and showed he was his old self. So whenever he returns to the floor on Tuesday, it'll be the same old Thunder that's been this entire season, this wild ride that I don't think anyone expected from the Thunder.
All right. Now, the Rockets made this drastic change midseason to small ball, and it was met with a lot of concern, a lot of, criticism. Can they really win a championship this way? Give me your outsider's perspective on small ball. What have you thought of it so far? Do you like it? Do you dislike it? And how do you think that matches up with the Thunder?
So I think it's just taking the extreme of what the NBA has already done for itself. You now want athletic big men. What did they do? They put their most athletic players at the center position, and they kept putting athletes there instead of putting these guys like, no shot at him, but Steven Adams at center. They want more versatility. They want more guys that can do more things on the floor. And it reminds me a lot of what happens in baseball, where you see the Rays or the A's doing this money ball, and I know that in Houston it's called Morey ball, of just taking one concept and doing it and putting all of your eggs in one basket. And I think that it's very admirable. I mean, what else was Clint Capella giving you? At some point, you've got to change it up. At some point, you can only do the same thing over and over again. I know that they already changed the Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook factor, but I would prefer what the Rockets are doing if I was a fan. I would prefer at least trying. I mean, they're trying new things. They're trying to improve their team. And I think that the small ball gets a bit of a bad rap because, as we'll talk about here, I'm still concerned if Steven Adams can stay on the floor. He's gotten played off the floor of the last two postseasons against Rudy Gobert and Enes Kanter. Those are two typical big men. Is he going to stay on the floor when he's facing off against Eric Gordon or whoever the Rockets are going to throw down at him, his way down there? Are they going to be able to play him off the floor with their athleticism? So it's not like you can just throw it to Adams and say, okay, go lay it up. I know at home we're going to be screaming for that in Oklahoma City. These fans haven't had NBA basketball for, 20 years yet. They're still new to the game a little bit. They're going to be saying, hey, this guy's way too small to be guarding Steven Adams. Why don't you just give it to him and let him go? You can't exactly do that against Houston. For one thing, as we've mentioned, you've got good post defenders. But another thing is that lets a team that's already viewed as a team that lacks depth that lets them just reset and regroup defensively before they get out and run offensively. So even though it's small, I do think that from the outside, you can't just look at it as size and look at it as an entire body of work. And what the Rockets have done, yes, it's unconventional. Yes, it's looked at reinventing the wheel, but it just might be crazy enough to work. I think that there's no sure thing that you can play even Steven Adams, who's more athletic than what people give him credit for. But still, I'm concerned about that, even with the lack of size on Houston.
You know, that to me, seriously, is going to be a very interesting chess match right there between Billy Donovan and Mike D'Antoni. And speaking of Billy Donovan, a guy who, you know, I really think, you know, should be, you know, obviously just commendable job for what he did with the Thunder this year. Obviously, Chris Paul gets a lot of credit for, you know, being the on-the-court leader of that team. But Billy Donovan, excellent job, you know, coaching the Thunder to the fifth spot in the Western Conference when, you know, a lot of people thought that they were going to miss the playoffs. And so I want to know, just take me inside Billy Donovan's mindset. Do you expect him to double team Harden? Are we looking at single coverage? How do you think the Thunder are going to attempt to slow down, you know, the Beard?
So slow down is the right way to put it. They're not going to stop him, but they do have Lu Dort, who's come onto the scene as just a phenomenal defender. They have Terrence Ferguson, who's had some success whenever guarding James Harden, as much success as you can possibly have. Now they do have Andre back, but I wouldn't expect him to play, you know, 20 minutes or a bulk of minutes against James Harden. That's kind of a break glass in case of emergency. But Hamidou Diallo is someone who Billy has just fallen in love with these eight seeding games. He's been the first wing off the bench in every game. He's gotten a ton of minutes in these eight seeding games, and he's actually one of the best shot disruptors in the NBA, which was surprising to even myself. So I think that when it comes to James Harden, they're going to try to switch everything. They're going to try to not foul him as hard as that is, and they're just going to pray. They're just going to pray and hope that something magical happens where he does not absolutely torch you. But yeah, they're going to throw out Ferguson. They're going to throw out Dort if he's healthy. They're going to throw out Diallo and just hope for the best and try to get a lot of switches going. You don't want to leave someone on an island where there's no help involved. And you could see them even running a bit of a zone concept. He's been running a sloppy zone, I like to call it, where you're in man still, but you feel comfortable leaving a guy and rushing over to help and then having someone rotate over to the corner wherever you just left from. But you're basically still in man coverage there. But it's going to be interesting to see how they match up defensively. And that's yet another reason why I worry about Steven Adams.
You know, that's a beautiful point right there. Is so many of the Rocket struggles have come from, you know, when teams dare, you know, people not named James Harden or Russell Westbrook to beat you. And even times, there have been times where they've dared Russell Westbrook to beat them. And, you know, the Rockets have come up short because they've, you know, other teams have committed to double teaming James Harden at the half court mark. You know, as soon as he crosses half court, they send the double at him, a hard trap. And, you know, the teams have found some success doing that. So, you know, in your mind, just now, first off, Dort is definitely missing the very first game of the series, correct?
Well, I think he won't be 100%, which is going to be a huge detriment to trying to guard James Harden. But they're playing the cat and mouse game a little bit. If it was me, I'd say I'd feel more comfortable betting on he missed the game. But today, Billy Donovan says he's progressing a lot better than expected, and that his availability is still up in the air. But he's on pace, and he's outperforming the projections they had for him in terms of his treatment. So I wouldn't rule him out just yet. But if I absolutely had to bet on Sunday night, I would say he's going to miss game one.
Bad news for Rockets fans, good news for Thunder fans right there. Now, you know, another guy who suffered a potentially minor injury, Chris Paul, you know, had that left hand injury. You know, apart from that, one, any word on that and, you know, what's going on there? And are there any other injuries or any other kind of ailments, you know, that Rockets fans should know about regarding the Thunder? You know, guys who might miss a little bit of time or guys who aren't going to be at 100% for this series?
So as you know, injuries in the NBA, they're easily covered up. So who knows what's the truth and what's not. But I'll just say that the Thunder in general have always refused to use the resting as the reason they're out or load managing. I think that they just made up an injury, to be honest. Or, yeah, his hand's bothering him a little bit, so let's just use that as the reason he's sitting out, not that it's a meaningless game against the Clippers. You saw in the back-to-back, all of a sudden there was a Shea calf injury last Monday against the Suns that had never been brought up before. And he was fine, perfectly fine the very next game to play, and he had his best game of the seeding games the next game. So I think that was just something the Thunder made up because they just, for some reason, refused to call it what it is, and it's load managing and it's resting guys who don't need to be playing in meaningless games. So there hasn't been any discussion about the hand since then. We've talked to Chris Paul and Billy Donovan. by all accounts, he's perfectly fine. And again, it just seems like it's something the Thunder just refused to call rest. But Steven Adams did get banged up in the seeding games, and he hasn't looked himself since he came back. Now, it's kind of in two halves here. In the first four games, Adams looked good. I mean, he looked healthy for the first time in years. He looked stronger. As he said, he was boxing out cows on his farm during the hiatus. He looked stronger, but he falls underneath his leg and hurts his knee a little bit. And now he's a bit hobbled, and now he's going to be facing off against quicker, more athletic people downloaded to keep up with. And Adams just concerns me a lot with that knee injury. And as we know, the playoff history with him the last couple of years. So Adams is the biggest injury to me. And Lou Dort, of course, is the biggest injury to me. But as far as Chris Paul, I think he'll be perfectly fine come tip off on Tuesday.
Great insight so far from Rylan. I want to keep this conversation rolling along and ask him some questions about a guy who I have some legitimate concerns about in Dennis Schroeder. And we'll get there in just one moment after a quick word from our friends over at DoorDash. Look, between never-ending laundry cycles, incoming emails, you know, kids, whatever you've got going on, you've got plenty on your to-do list and not enough on your plate. So you can give yourself one less thing to worry about and let DoorDash take care of your very next meal. Look, DoorDash is the app that brings you food that you are craving right now, right to your door. Look, I cannot count the number of times that I've been at work, you know, you roll out of bed a little bit late, you know, you don't have time to stop and make breakfast or pick up breakfast from somewhere else. You get to work, and I'm still one of the people that I'm still going into the office. I'm still going into work at least four or five times a week. And I cannot count the number of times that I've made it there. And I'm there for 45 minutes and my stomach starts rumbling and I am hungry. I'm ready to eat. And you know what I do? I bust out my phone, I grab DoorDash, and I start looking at all the different places nearby. It is awesome. Like just the amount of variety that is on the app, you know, ordering is easy. You can open the app, you choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left right outside your door. Or they have this new contactless delivery drop-off setting where you can choose, hey, I don't want to interact with my driver. I COVID-19, everything going on. I don't want to interact with them. Just drop it off right outside. It's super easy. It's seamless. I use it all the time, and I highly recommend that you do it too. So right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off your order and zero delivery fees on your very first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. So don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your very first order with DoorDash. And we're back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Be sure, if you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts so that you can get it as soon as possible, even before I start shouting about it on Twitter. Now, I'm sitting here chatting with Rylan Styles of Locked On Thunder. So, Rylan, looking at some of these numbers for Dennis Schroeder, and the on-off ratings are insane with him on the court versus him not on the court. When Schroeder's on the court with Chris Paul, they have basically a 115 offensive rating and a 99.4 defensive rating, good for a net rating of 15.6. What is it about when Dennis Schroeder takes the court that makes the Thunder unbeatable?
Because he takes pressure off of Shea in a way where, yes, Shea is perfectly capable of scoring and handling the ball, but as we've seen in these seeding games without Dennis, when he has to kind of run an offensive set, he gets a little frantic out there. And having Dennis is just such a huge safety net. I'll also say that that's their nightmare lineup that they like to throw at the end of the games. And they've just so happened to be a historically great clutch team. So that small sample size mixed with going just berserk in the clutch time makes those numbers look a lot bigger. But Dennis has absolutely been phenomenal. And I think that he's shown he's a starting caliber guard in this league, and he's accepted the role of being a sixth man, which is just so impressive. Obviously, he would not start for a championship contender, but anywhere past seed six, I think you can see him as a starting guard somewhere, and he's just embraced that sixth man role. I think for Dennis, what it is just his pace. It's been such a change from whenever he's not on the floor. Whenever you have Dort, who's, you know, a 30% shooter from deep, and yeah, he's aggressive. He'll take the shot, but again, he's likely not going to make it. And he likes to play slow, and Shea likes to have the game come to him, and Chris Paul likes the game to come to him. Your defense adjusts to that. Then all of a sudden, we're throwing in Dennis Schroeder, who is going to run the floor and force Shea and force Paul to run with him and keep the ball moving. And then you expose defenses with three guys who can use a quick twitch to get around somebody who's not as agile. I mean, at that point, Shea is playing your small forward. Dennis is on your shooting guard, who might be a little bit bigger than a typical point guard. So then Shea has the speed advantage there. And then, of course, you have Chris Paul. So then you have DeLon Gallinari to kick it out to and then shoot three balls. So that lineup truly does create a lot of mismatches for a lot of defenses to where those numbers just look historic. But Dennis has been awesome. I think that he's by far the sixth man of the year.
I think Locked On Thunder fans will appreciate me saying this, but, you know, a peek behind the curtains, we have an ongoing week by week, you know, poll that we do at Locked On where we vote for, you know, who we think is going to make it out of, you know, each conference. And we've also done polls about, you know, the awards and who we think deserves each award, you know, MVP, sixth man of the year. I voted for Dennis Schroeder. He has been my sixth man of the year. He's been my leading candidate for a while now. Part of it's because I don't think you can have two sixth man of the year award candidates on the same team in Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams, because ipso facto, one of them is not the sixth man of the year. One of them is the seventh man of the year, you know, something like that. So I think Schroeder's been incredible, and he's obviously been a huge part of OKC's success. Now, Ryland, have you noticed, you know, with, I think on the surface, at least as an outsider looking in, one would think that a backcourt, you know, having, you know, Chris Paul and Dennis Schroeder out there at the same time would cause some defensive issues with their just lack of size. And as the host of Locked On Rockets and as a Rockets fan, I can't be the one talking about lack of size from the team that's running small ball. But have you noticed that, you know, throughout the season or even situationally, where those two guys being on the court together at the same time has caused problems from a defensive side of things?
So I think that this is where you get into the fact that they haven't played that many minutes together, in the sense of, you know, they've accumulated a lot of minutes, but it's all in certain situations. Like in Boston, in clutch time, they're able to play more aggressive because they know, okay, if I'm on the floor with Dennis or if I'm on the floor with Chris Paul and Shea, this is the time to win the basketball game. So they're going to be aggressive. And you saw them get, you know, strip Kemba Walker to win that game in Boston. And yes, they have defensive issues if you want to play them from tip-off to the final buzzer, but if you just allow them to go and allow them to be aggressive and allow them to go for steals the entire possession, and then, as we talked about, you have a defensive scheme that is predicated on rotating and predicated on, okay, we're in man right now, but I have to be ready to leave this guy, even if there's no screen, even if there's no true reason to leave him. If he makes a move to double, I've got to change as well. Since they play a smart basketball on the back end and they do have some anchors on this defense back there, it doesn't get exposed as much because you're allowing them to be so aggressive. Now, the flip side of that is, if you do need to play this lineup a lot longer, not only can it be exposed, but they can get in foul trouble. And you can't play that aggressive if you're in foul trouble. So the defense is a big concern, but with the way that they've played together and the way that the back end has anchored the defense, it really makes up for it. I mean, Gallinari doesn't get enough credit, I don't think, for being the defender he is. He's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year by any means, but he's at least very competent. Steven Adams has been a good defender this year. And you go on down the line there, Shea has the length and the size to be versatile and kind of defend anyone on the floor to the best of his ability. So then you're looking at only having two defensive liabilities. And again, they just play so aggressive and try to jump the passing lanes and things like that, to where they're not just going ISO one-on-one and getting exposed that way.
Now, I do want to talk about Russell Westbrook here soon, very shortly, but, you know, he is confirmed to be missing game one of this series. That is officially official. And I do want to get some thoughts from Ryland and just, you know, the general consensus of how OKC fans are viewing, you know, going up against Russell Westbrook, who once was the franchise player for the Thunder. But before I get there, I do have a couple more lineup specific questions. So how much, just ballpark, are we expecting to see the trio of Paul, Schroeder, and SGA on the court at the same time? Is it going to be just at the very tail end of a game? Is it going to be, you know, situationally throughout the game? You know, when does Billy Donovan go to that nightmare lineup that you called?
Well, typically, it's going to be the end of every quarter if it was a typical series, and especially in clutch time. But we've talked about Lou Dort. If you don't have Lou Dort, the question becomes, why not just throw your best offensive lineup out there? Why not throw out the lineup that will keep up with the Rockets, at least some offensively? Because at the end of the day, the alternative is starting Hamidou Diallo. It's starting Terrence Ferguson, who provide nothing offensively, and then maybe can stop James Harden a little bit. And maybe stopping James Harden a little bit, to me, isn't enough to warrant them starting in place of Lu Dort. To me, what warrants that enough is playing your literal best lineup you have on your roster to try to keep pace with a Rockets team led by James Harden that's going to score. So if Lu Dort is not 100% or he's not playing at all, I think you see it a ton more. And the interesting part about it is we haven't really seen what Billy Donovan's going to do in a postseason where it's not as crystal clear. Look, he hasn't had the opportunity to flex his coaching muscles until this year. His first year ever, he makes great adjustments all postseason long. He gets praised for out-coaching Pop and Kerr, even though they lost that series. And then he goes on and takes over a Russell Westbrook-led team where there's no one around him. And then the last 2 years, the rotations have been set. I mean, you've got to live and die by Chris Paul. I mean, you've got to live and die by Russell Westbrook and Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, and they just so happen to die. And that's how it goes sometimes. But he didn't have any leeway of what to do with the rotations. He was just stuck. And those are two guys who can't play any other offense than a ISO offense, which we've seen the Thunder balance when they're going to go ISO with Chris Paul or when they're going to go motion offense. And they've done a lot more motion than the history of this franchise, at least in Oklahoma City. So I think that everything's on the table for Billy Donovan for the first time in his coaching career since Florida. And at Florida, he won back-to-back championships. He was no slouch of the head coach at Florida. And you're seeing them run the offense he ran at Florida this year. So I think we're going to see it a lot more than expected, or a lot more than they have been doing in the regular season. But everything's on the table for this team for the first time in forever.
All right. Coming up, I want to talk to Rylan. I got a couple more questions that I want to ask, and then we'll also bring up the topic of Russell Westbrook, the one that is probably buzzing at the back of everybody's mind, you know, how Oklahoma City fans are viewing this series and going toe-to-toe with Russell Westbrook when he does get back and join the series, you know, healthy, because he's not joining quite just yet, but when he does get back. And we'll get there in just a quick moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. How do you feel about protein bars? Do you like protein bars? Do you think protein bar and you think yes, or do you think protein bar and you think ugh? Well, it's time to start thinking yes when you think about a protein bar, and you can do that with Built Bar. Look, it is the best tasting protein bar ever. Ever. Look, I used to hate protein bars. They were gritty, chalky, grimy, you name it. And if it was a bad adjective, that's probably what it was before Built Bar came along. Now with Built Bar, look, I've talked about it before. Double chocolate boost, my absolute number one flavor, but they've also come out with a bunch of other new flavors. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, lemon almond cheesecake, apple almond crisp. I mean, what are these flavors? These sound like fancy gourmet desserts. They don't sound like protein bars. Look, they're great for the health conscious person. You can, you know, eat these protein bars to lose weight or even maintain weight. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. They are great. I mean, great for keto diet. Built Bar has this new promo code for their relaunch, and it's Locked On. So it used to be different. It used to be a different promo code. So make sure you're using the new promo code this time around. So you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you will get $10 off your very next order. So be sure to use promo code Locked On for $10 off at builtbar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for all things Houston Rockets basketball. Be sure to stay up to date with the show and follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin and the show at Locked On Rockets. Now we're chatting with Rylan from Locked On Thunder. Now, Rylan, really quickly, you know, and we touched base on this a little bit in the Locked On Thunder version of this crossover, but what's been up with the rebounding, you know, as far as Oklahoma City is concerned? With Steven Adams, you would think they'd be a good, you know, probably a top 10 rebounding team. What's been going on in that department?
Well, I think it just shows you that it wasn't exactly empty stats Russell Westbrook was pulling off there, because whenever Steven Adams does get a box out or has another body on him, he can't do it himself, and then there's no one there to clean it up the way that there was a Russell Westbrook to clean that up before. I think that you'd like to see some more rebounding out of Adams, although he already, you know, he's almost averaging 10 rebounds a night. But Shea has added you 5. I think that number can grow as his career grows. But yeah, I mean, the rebounding has been a big issue for this team in the sense that they're not going small ball. They're keeping at least one of Adams and Noel on the floor the entire time if they're healthy. So there's no reason for them not to be grabbing more rebounds. It's puzzling to me on why they can't come down with more, because even if it's not Steven Adams directly getting them, you would assume if he's still a great guy that's been boxing out a lot, which the numbers reflect, he is still one of the best box out guys in the NBA. Why is Shea not coming to scoop it up, or Chris Paul not coming to scoop it up the same way Russell Westbrook was? Now, they don't need to average a triple-double, but I think that if the numbers show, which they do, that Adams is still boxing out the same rate, his number should be above five, and for Chris Paul should be above, you know, five and four rebounds in their own right. So the rebounding is a bit strange to me, but obviously teams have just decided, hey, we're not going to let Adams kill us on the boards. He's going to get you 10 just out of pure strength and girth. But outside of that, he's not going to have phenomenal rebounding games. And we'll see if Gallinari or if Chris Paul can go scoop him up. And so far they haven't. And we'll see if that can kind of flip-flop against Houston.
So I saved this for the third segment. What Russell Westbrook and just, you know, this team having to go up against his former team, what's the thought process going on there? Obviously, he's not going to be in the first few games, at least the first two games, more than likely, possibly the first three games. But what is going to be the emotional reaction when he takes to the court against his former team, you know, the city that raised him, basically? And like, I remember his first night back in Oklahoma City and just how, you know, he even did his usual pregame warmup, and that, like, that touched my heart. I was like, okay, man, this is a special moment for him. And then the Rockets laid an egg that game. That was a rough game, second night of a back-to-back. The Rockets played in Atlanta the night before. Mike D'Antoni used one of his patented seven-man rotations for whatever reason against the Atlanta Hawks, and then they went into OKC and laid an egg. And Russ was the only guy who showed up that game, and you could tell that he was bothered at the end of that game, that he, you know, was a little bit heated towards his teammates, maybe a bit, that they didn't, you know, take the game as seriously as he did. What is the reaction coming out of the Thunder fan base right now about having to go up against Russ?
Well, we can spend about an hour just talking about this topic alone. And I think that of all the stories that you can point to about Russell Westbrook, what he means in Oklahoma City and what he's done for Oklahoma City, just literally being here since the franchise moved here, being the first pick that Thunder ever made. I know he had to wear that silly Seattle hat, but that's just the NBA being idiots, because we knew whenever he put on that hat that he was moving to Oklahoma City. Why couldn't he just wear a Thunder hat? But they didn't have a logo at the time and whatever. But literally the first ever pick that this team ever got to call their own, the first ever rookie this team ever got to call their own, he stays after Kevin Durant leaves, signs an extension, you know, like a month, literally a month to the day after Kevin Durant leaves, talks all about how this is his home. But the story to me, the triple doubles, the playoff wins or playoff losses, whatever you want to look at, to me, about 4 days after he got traded, someone spotted him in Oklahoma City, you know, going to his favorite breakfast spot. And they asked him, what are you doing here, Russ? You just got traded to Houston. He goes, I live here. And so I think that it was funny just seeing that he truly did embrace Oklahoma City. He truly did. He wasn't someone who, he's an LA guy, and as soon as he can get out of town, he got out of town, went back to LA when the season was over. He truly lived in Oklahoma City for most of the year, and he put a lot of his time and energy and effort into the community, not just the organization. You see him even now in Houston having a documentary about the black market in Tulsa. And that to me really shows what Russell Westbrook meant to the Thunder and the city and the state, the first ever professional sports team here. And what Oklahoma City, I think, means to him, because you're right. They did raise him. They embraced him from day one and watched him mature as a literal adult from being a 19-year-old kid up until a grown man with a family and a wife and kids and everything else. It's just weird that sports can do that to you. And I think that if you ask this question to five different Thunder fans, you're going to get five different answers. I think that where I settle on is, it sounds kind of corny and cliche. I wish the best for Russell Westbrook. I hope that he's healthy. I hope that he's perfectly fine with that quad injury. But at the end of the day, he's an opponent. And there are no friends on the basketball floor besides Spalding, as he said. The Thunder need to win. The Thunder need to win their first playoff series since Kevin Durant left town. That's the bottom line. I know this season was house money. I know this season was not supposed to go this way. But the bottom line is, since Thanksgiving, the Thunder have been one of the best teams in basketball, and they need to win their first playoff series since Kevin Durant left. And Russell Westbrook does not want me or anyone else hoping that he goes to the championship or hoping that he beats Oklahoma City. He's an opponent now. Thank you for everything that you've done. Thank you for the great memories. But at the end of the day, this is sports, and people change teams and all the time. And he wanted out of Oklahoma City. He got out of Oklahoma City. And now we've have to move on with this. And one day he'll be back and he'll have a statue and he'll have his number retired next to Nick Collison. We'll have a big ceremony. But until then, he's an opponent. I hope that he's healthy, but at the end of the day, I still want to beat him, and I don't care what numbers he puts up, or I don't care if he goes on to win a championship. He's an opponent, and he's looked at it as such, and I think that's how he'd want people to look at him from Oklahoma City. That's his mentality. There are no friends besides Spalding, and right now, Our friend that has Spalding is Chris Paul instead of Russell Westbrook, which is so weird to say, but it gets a little bit easier whenever you factor in that Chris Paul has spent his first 2 years in the NBA in Oklahoma City anyway.
There, that is one of the unique connections when you circle everything back, you know, is that Chris Paul did play there for a couple seasons, you know, back, you know, Hurricane Katrina, the relocation of the Hornets, all that stuff. Well, yeah, they were the Hornets. Sorry, it's all throwing me off because, you know, Pelicans now. Yeah. But anyways, you know, and I must say, Rylan, very beautifully put. You know, I think one of the things that, you know, a misconception about Russ just as a person is he is not, you know, who he is on a basketball court when he's off a basketball court. He's, you know, getting to, you know, meet him, you know, see him in person and, you know, talk to him at Rockets Media Day, seeing how much of a family man he is, how family oriented he is, the type of work that he does in the community. You know, just, he really is a down to earth guy who, you know, loves his family, loves his wife, loves his kids, wants to make the world a better place and is doing that. You know, he's got this, you know, aggressive, you know, just, the basketball is my only friend mentality when he's on the court, but off the court, he seems like such a nice, just good dude, you know, really kind human being, a good person. And I couldn't have put it better myself. And so thank you for doing that. But, and I share your sentiment. I think that he wouldn't want it any other way. I think he's a competitor first and foremost, and he's looking at this as another competition. And that's why I've been banking on, he's only going to miss two games. I feel like Russ would have to take a bullet like in the leg to somehow miss this series against his former team, because he wants to get out there. And because of the competitor that he is, I know that he wants to get out there and beat the Thunder. And, you know, in his mindset, it might be, if anybody's going to eliminate my former team, it's going to be me. And you know, I want to get a couple more points in here before we wrap things up. But aside from Harden, and Westbrook, you know, his return permitting, which matchups are the most concerning to you from a Thunder perspective? Which players on the Rockets give you the heebie-jeebies? Which ones are you worried about?
You know, I hate to do this because it sounds like if this is the first time you're listening, it sounds like I hate Steven Adams, but Steven Adams has not been able to stay on the floor in the postseason. If he can't do it this series, where he has the size advantage, where he should be able to out-rebound everyone, where he should be able to provide an asset to the Thunder, which is getting possessions back, either getting second chances or ending Rocket possessions, which is ending a chance for James Harden to shoot a three, then when is he ever going to stay on the floor if he can't do it this time? And I have a big concern that he can do it. So for me, it's everyone that will match up with Steven Adams and everyone that will make his life terrible on the floor and make Billy Donovan pull the plug on Steven Adams. Because again, if he can't do it this time with all that's going for him and what little is going against him, then I don't think there's ever going to be room for Steven Adams in the NBA as we continue to evolve into more athletic big men, into more small big men and things like that.
So for the Thunder fans listening to that, that would be PJ Tucker and Jeff Green matching up with Steven Adams largely. Now, obviously, I apologize, but the Rockets do practice a switch everything defense. So there will be times that Steven Adams is matched up against somebody that is not one of those players, but he will be for the majority of any time that he is out on the court. Steven Adams will be stretched towards the perimeter because the Rockets do have a five out spacing. Everybody on the court at all times is a 3-point threat. So Steven Adams will be forced to have to contest and kind of, you know, float further away from the paint than he's probably used to doing. And so it will be interesting to see whether he gets played off the court or if Billy Donovan trusts him enough to leave him out there. Now, you know, one of the other things that I want to kind of pick your mind about, Rylan, is thinking about this Rockets team and some of the threats that they do have. Just, you know, I want to know from your standpoint, where the Thunder's weakness is, you know, what causes them to lose this series in your mind? If things go poorly, if everything goes wrong, what's the one thing that causes them to lose this series above all else?
To me, it's Gallinari. I think that I can trust Chris Paul for better or worse. I think that I can trust Shea after what he did against Golden State last year in the playoffs. Obviously, with a second-year player, he doesn't have that big of a track record. But again, he played really well for the Clippers against the Golden State Warriors, who at the time were a healthy team. And I do think I can trust Chris Paul and Shea and Schroeder plays a much better role for him. He was not fit for an ISO offense. He can't just catch and shoot. He needs a lot more than just that to be successful, and he'll get that this season, unlike the last two seasons. But for Gallinari, it's a make or miss league, and if he's off from three-point land, which he has been in these eight seeding games, now how much of that is a veteran not caring or valuing these games, and how much of that is him not being able to get a shot down after a four-month layoff? If Gallinari can't make threes, who's going to hit them? Shea's a fine three-point shooter, but he shoots under 35%. Chris Paul's a good three-point shooter, but he can't do it alone. Who's going to make threes if Gallo can't do it? Because Shea and Paul are going to create in that mid-range, and Shea's going to get to the cup, and that should leave Gallinari with at least space to get a shot off. If they're not falling, though, there goes your three-point offense. And as you know, three is bigger than two, so if James Harden is lighting it up from downtown that game, no matter how many beautiful mid-range shots or rip moves that Chris Paul pulls off or how many beautiful scoops that Shea has at the rim, you're not going to make up that ground mathematically. So to me, Gallinari is a huge question mark of what he can bring. And if he has nothing to provide the series, if he's having an off shooting night, they've lost that game, in my opinion. And again, it's only a seven-game series. So if you get behind the eight ball early, that's kind of all she wrote against a team that's as good as the Rockets.
You know, that's a really interesting point because, you know, and I've talked about this, you know, before with the Rockets, with the way small ball works is there's a very slim margin for error on everything that you do, you know, whether it's rebounding, whether it's, you know, defensive communications, rotations, things like that. And if the Thunder are having, you know, issues with their three-point shooting, it's going to shrink the floor to where the Rockets are able to sag off of shooters a bit more. They're able to kind of pack the paint a bit more, kind of maybe clog some of those SGA drives or any, you know, potential, you know, runs at the rim by other guards or, you know, getting the ball down low to Steven Adams at times, anything like that. It's going to be huge in the Rockets being able to, you know, sag away from three-point shooters, kind of double team down low if needed. Now, it's funny that you mentioned that you say Gallo, because from a Rockets angle, there's been a lot of Rockets fans that think that he is the potential X factor in this series for OKC in the sense that he's the guy that they are worried about most. And I want to know, you know, this kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, when they first committed to small ball, the guys that scared me the most were the bigs that had a soft touch, that had a shot, that could use not only their size, but were able to essentially face up the smaller Rockets and just play over the top of them. And the two that usually came to mind were Kristaps Porzingis and Nikola Jokic. But I think Gallo can kind of be thrown into that mix. Do you see Gallo as a guy who can, you know, kind of face up some of the smaller Rockets and go to town if his shot's falling?
Oh, absolutely. I don't want to sound like a homer here, but Gallo can torch these Rockets. I mean, he's been having some strong finishes at the rim throughout these eight seeding games and throughout this entire season. And I think that he's shown people in Oklahoma City that he's not just a shooter. He can truly drive and be effective in getting and ones at the rim. But the shot hasn't really fallen in Orlando yet. So if that shot comes along and if he breaks out of this mini shooting slump, that I struggle to call it even a shooting slump, because again, who knows how much of this is truly him being off and just him not caring about wildly meaningless games for the Thunder for the most part. Coming into this Orlando bubble, they had already locked up, you know, their playoff spot. And then as each game passed, look increasingly likely if they weren't going to play the Clippers. So that was really all you wanted to avoid there, because I think that these matchups outside the Clippers are all about the same for Oklahoma City. So if Gallo can get a shot down, he can be a huge X factor, and he can be the reason that pushes you over the edge in this series. So I think Rocket fans have a great reason to worry about Gallinari.
All right. Some great insight there. Rylan, I really appreciate it. I love doing these crossovers with other Locked On hosts. I think they are a phenomenal way to get some insight into opposing fan bases and teams and just, you know, the inner workings of other organizations, because we spend so much time talking about our respective teams that it's nice to take a glimpse at the other ones. So before we get you out of here officially, go ahead and let Rockets fans know where they can find you so that, you know, they can kind of check things out from a Thunder standpoint as we go toe-to-toe in this series.
So real quick, I like to derail shows. I like to throw things off track and off the rundown a little bit. Can I? Now, on our podcast that Rockets fans need to go listen to, because it'll get you very excited for this series, you said a lot of things that scared me about this series. Can I put something in the universe that might scare Rockets fans a little bit and make them feel the same nervousness I'm feeling now hours before this game, where I've got to wait it out and just struggle to get to this tip-off?
You are absolutely allowed to share that. Absolutely. I will not stop you. And I'm glad you said that, because I needed to get your official prediction as well. I almost skipped that. That would have been horrendous. So you go for it, Rylan. Put fear in Rockets fans. Please do that.
So I love Russell Westbrook. Love him. Franchise player. Franchise pillar. Going to have his number retired. We already know the statue that will be out there will be the and one flip against the Lakers where he's strutting it down the sidelines. We love him. The fact of the matter is, against the Utah Jazz, Ricky Rubio punked him in a playoff series. Against the Portland Trailblazers, Damian Lillard punked him in a playoff series. Chris Paul is the biggest agitator in the NBA. And you have the factor of Russell Westbrook playing emotionally against his former team, trying to make this trade seem worth it. Chris Paul playing emotionally, trying to make this trade for Oklahoma City seem worth it and make the Rockets look stupid. Didn't end on the best of terms, in my opinion, with Harden and D'Antoni. And when Russell Westbrook plays emotionally, he's typically not the best version of himself. And while he's improved in Houston, he's not taking those dumb three-pointers that he can't make. He's not rushing into a shot. Old habits die hard. He has not done it in the postseason yet, and he has not done it in a environment with this much emotion. Again, Ricky Rubio got him out of his elements. 2 years ago, Ricky Rubio did that. And then Damian Lillard did that as well last postseason. You don't think Chris Paul can get underneath Russ's skin enough to throw him off his game, enough to dare him to shoot a three he shouldn't be shooting and to miss a three he shouldn't have shot at all and to end a possession, a critical possession for Houston? You don't think that'll make him rush a shot or take a drive that's contested by three people just to try to prove he can do it, and then he ends up missing it and ruins another possession the next time around, or throw a lazy turnover as he's known to do? I think that if Russell Westbrook plays in this series, which he will, it's not a sure thing that he's the best version of himself. So I'm going to throw that out there as something Rockets fans can ponder as we wait tip-off on Tuesday night.
Oh, man, what a monkey paw to throw in there. Just, oh, okay. All right. No, you know, I survived it. I'm a little bit more worried now, but I survived it. All right, now we'll get you out of here, Ryland, with your official prediction for the series.
My heart says Thunder in seven, because I've waited so long since Kevin Durant left to be able to say the Thunder won a playoff series. But my heart also says this team has let me down over and over and over again over the last two seasons, so how can I predict anything less than a heartbreaking loss? I'm going to even it out with my non-biased brain and say the Rockets win a hard-fought series in seven games, which will just be even more heartbreaking, but eventually a James Harden step back will be a dagger that ends this series in seven and sends the Thunder home. And as we talked about, on my show, where the Rockets don't feel the best. I mean, they're not going to get a round of applause and a gold medal for beating the Thunder. There's going to be a pat on the head and say, good job, you did your job. And the Thunder are going to get sent home and say, hey, we have 15 future first-round picks. The season was not supposed to happen. We weren't supposed to be a playoff team, and we made it to a top-five seed and went to seven games. So I think that for the Rockets' sake, they better win this series, because no one's going to give you a trophy if you win. But if you lose this series, I think nationally you'll be a laughingstock. So it's kind of that OU versus Houston college football vibe that we talked about on my show from a couple of years ago. But I do think when it all boils down, my heart says Thunder, my brain says Rockets in seven. So I'll go Rockets in seven.
All right. That is the official prediction from Locked On Thunder host Ryland Stiles. Ryland, thank you so much for being here. And, you know, definitely Rockets fans, please, or Rockets and Thunder fans, you got to go check out the other episode that we did, that we recorded just before this one, over at Locked On Thunder for the Rockets side of things. But be sure to stay tuned throughout the entire week as we preview and break down each game against the OKC Thunder, how you're feeling about the series, all that good stuff. Now, Ryland, where can Rockets fans check you out and find all your content so that they can keep up with the Thunder side of things this series?
So you can find, of course, Locked On Thunder anywhere you get your podcast from. You can find me on Twitter, if you didn't find me too annoying this episode, at Ryland_Stiles. It's at RYLAN_STILES. And then you can find some written work at DailyThunder.com. They do a great job over there, and I contribute there. I will have a piece coming out on Monday afternoon, so you can look out for that as well. But it's going to be a fun series. I think that this is by far the best first-round series the NBA has to offer.
I am in 100% agreement there with you, Ryland. Thank you so much for doing this crossover with me today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's going to do it for today's show. So as always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.